This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney broadcasting from Miami, Florida. Wow. It is a different site over on the east coast of the Sunshine State, where the big concern is sargassum, that huge blob of seaweed that has hit the Florida Keys when so many people go there just down from Miami on vacation. But it was really about tornadoes for the people in Mississippi especially, but also Alabama, and so many people listening to this show in the southeast that have dealt with tornadoes and a dramatic rise in tornadoes in the last couple of years. I'm with you. I've been there, and it's really, really tough to go through them. So let's talk about it. There's more than 24 people dead. Dozens were hurt. Four were just completely missing. These storms ripped through the South on Friday night, knocked out power for more than 83,000 homes and businesses. And we're not just talking about Mississippi, by the way. Alabama, like I mentioned, Tennessee, good source if you're looking for relatives and friends that might be stuck with a power problem. Go to poweroutage.us. I found that a couple of years ago, and it seems to be the best way because I can never get through to the power companies. Terrible. The tornado touched down one of them in Mississippi. The damage and the death toll were the worst there. Search and rescue teams were just scattered throughout the state. It was massive. You know, Rolling Fork and Silver City, just terrible. Again, there's just no great words to describe it. I mean, when these towns are flattened, I mean, it was a tragic night in Mississippi. The loss of life, the damage to the communities, the, of course, disaster declarations all over the place. And how horrible for first responders, for families, for everybody. But the great thing about Mississippians, they band together, just like so many in this great country, and they work alongside each other, and that's what they're doing in helping people with food and shelter and everything they need. You know, I always try to describe it, what it's like, and as I said, there's no adjectives, there's no great way to describe it. If you've ever been in a tornado, it's scary as all you know what. And luckily, my family has never been ravaged by it, but I've had friends who have been, and I've seen what's happened when their house just blows away, basically. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, we're talking about unrecognizable areas where a truck is not a truck anymore, a car is not a car, there's bricks everywhere, and people are just combing through the wreckage. If they're lucky enough not to have lost somebody or suffered through an injury, then it becomes about, okay, what are we doing now to pick up the pieces? And, you know, you talk about some population areas where there's some density that's certainly increased. And then there's areas where there's more mobile homes, some beautiful mobile home parks that are just look like it's just trash strewn from end to end because it's the wreckage, the aftermath of the tornado. And we've seen that this has happened more and more, sadly. And Rolling Fork that I mentioned was the entire community is just basically gone. It's on the west side of Mississippi, near the border with Arkansas and Louisiana, to give you a sense of you know, where it was located. And there were just so many people that described what they had to do, how they narrowly escaped. One that gave me the chills, there was a woman who talked about, she owned a dairy bar, and she talked about that she had to hide in a freezer during the storm, and she just narrowly missed just getting leveled, and along with some other people as well. And then they come out of it, and they see, like I described, the trucks, the trailers, the tractors, all just on top of each other. And, you know, there are businesses, homes, just completely gone. Just that's it. So FEMA is there. They headed right away to Mississippi and to Alabama. They're on the ground. Of course, the number one priority is life safety, and then the damage assessments start, because that's what happens when you're completely demolished. So trust me, we're thinking about all of you, how tough that is. On a lighter note, because I feel like sometimes we don't go into that enough. And throughout the week, I'll be talking about Miami and about this incredible tennis tournament and how they take the Hard Rock Stadium and transform it into a major tennis tournament in the United States. It's called the Sunshine Double, coming off of a Palm Springs stop and now into to Miami. You know, we've talked about how tough it's been in California with the weather, with the atmospheric rivers and with the amount of snow. What's the one upside of the snow? I'm going to give you an upside of the snow. It's not the snow angels that you never could make before, but some people would probably say that, or a snowman. But this is a place where I went to a couple of times when I lived a long time ago in California. But Mammoth Mountain is a popular, you know, ski resort, and they say they're going to be open. This is so crazy. They're going to be open till at least the end of July. They have never had it open so late, but they're talking about the record snowfall, and they're saying that they're going to try to keep, you know, using the lifts and doing what they do. And even that the fact that it could go into August, they say it's the best snow that they've ever seen. You know, in Tahoe, same thing. They're talking about keeping the alpine portion of that resort, with all the things people have had to deal with there, open until the July 4th weekend, because they had the second snowiest winter on record. So while it's the yin and yang, right? While you have this atmospheric river, you've had this deluge of rain and snow, and people have dealt with that, and there's just been some awful things that have happened, the flooding, the mudslides that have been triggered. The other side of this historic thing is that now all of a sudden you've got replenished reservoirs. You've got the snow that's leading to these crazy lengthy times of being able to leave resorts open, right? Mother Nature gives and takes, just like the terrible thing with the tornadoes that I mentioned just a few moments ago. Just terrible. All right, if you're like me and you're going to the store, you may see, which I'm sure you're going to the store, we have the sticker shock, right? We've talked about that enough because of inflation. But have you seen the Girl Scouts? Have they been out selling the cookies? One thing crazy that happened with the Girl Scouts this year, I was a Girl Scout, and I had to sell cookies in front of the A&P. I did it. And I remember I even got the badge. I just wanted to sell the 60 boxes. Well, they had a new cookie this year, a Raspberry Rally cookie. And because it was so popular, there were people that were selling it on eBay, in some cases listed for $40 a box, because the supply chain broke down. They couldn't keep up with the demand to pump out more of these rallies. So they said the manufacturers of the cookies said they needed more lead time to be able to make the limited edition cookies. That's what happened. There was even, of course, the bad weather that caused power outages at a Kentucky plant, so they couldn't keep up with the inventory. So the rally sold out, and it left scouts and parents in the lurch trying to explain the situation to shoppers because they wanted to get it. And what happened was they didn't predict, I think, correctly. This is a branding thing for the rallies. And it probably was difficult because of the way you had to buy them. It was offered online. The shipments were sent directly to customers, so shoppers could order it themselves. But then that became the problem, right? And then all of a sudden, you can't get them because of the reasons, the supply chain thing. They couldn't produce them fast enough. So, wow, a lesson for the Girl Scouts. And they certainly learned from that, right? That's why you stick with the thin mints. You can just get them at the store when you go to the store from the fabulous Girl Scouts who are trying to get their badges. That's all I got to say. All right, we're headed to the mailroom next for the mailbag.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure has stabilized. My lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's XTENDOVITE.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us all. I appreciate GCN listeners because you're open-minded and intelligent. If our system is so great, why is it that the United States, the USA, ranks nearly 60th worldwide in longevity and number one in obesity? All the while, we spend more money than all the other countries combined annually on unnecessary health care procedures and toxic drugs. It doesn't take much to get on track, not with the government or pharmaceutical companies, but rather you in control of your own health with a basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation. FDI Longevity has the finest quality health, sports, and energy supplements available. GCN listeners are invited to join our team of people who want to stay healthy well into old age. We are currently looking for specialists to represent FDI Longevity and save America. To buy products at wholesale prices or join our business team, go to GCNteam.com. That's GCNteam.com. Support GCN. Get healthy.
My name is Milan Vukovic. 10 years ago, I got frustrated with the quality of Pau D'Arco tea sold in the stores. So, I founded the Pau D'Arco Tea Club that now ships our super tea to over 100 countries. You, too, can order or get info about the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea at www.drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. Why settle for less when you can order original pure Pau D'Arco and drink super tea for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping? Each pound makes 300 cups, which is the equivalent of 12 cents per cup for the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea. Order now at www.drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113.
Alright, welcome to the mailbag, and boy, you are kind of all over the map in this mailbag. I love it. 24/7, you can email me, kate@katedelaneyradio.com. Alright, so let's jump to this one first. A lot of you reacting to the tornado and the reports you heard, and some of you not too far from the tornadoes. I got this one from Joe in Florida, who says, I have family members that were pretty darn close to that disaster in Mississippi. Luckily, they weren't, but they immediately took cases and cases of water to try to help the people that survived. You know, that tornado was just crazy, Kate, how big it was. 100-mile path is what they told me. And I'm just wondering if there's other help that people can lend in this country when these situations happen. Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of organizations. I love that your family immediately, of course, let's just throw the water in. Let's go and take it to them because, you know, that's what you need. You need some clothes, you need some shelter, you need some water, you need some sustenance, especially when your mind is just so distraught, especially if you lost people. But even if you didn't, you lost your belongings, your way of life, the whole thing. RedCross.org is good because they always have people on the scene right there. And you can just make donations to them. They always set up tornado relief. It's really good. I've heard from several people that work for them how much money actually goes to directly into the situations. And that's a good place to start anyway. And we'll add some more, I think, throughout the week because I'm hearing of more organizations that go and are boots on the ground and they take donations and they just use them strictly for food or for clothes or for whatever relief. But Rolling Fork, I mean, that town is the town I said at the top that was just really, really, really just knocked on its knees because of this tornado. I mean, you look at the photos and this happened on Friday and it's still incredibly devastating for weeks and months and years. Sometimes afterwards, you feel it in an effort to rebuild. I mean, when you have wind gusts of 80 miles an hour and hail the size of golf balls hitting you, hitting your house, etc. 100 miles long, that's an incredibly long path. So of course you're going to see piles and miles of wreckage in those areas. So no surprise, you got to do the state of emergency. You got to get FEMA on the ground. They're there. So that's key to try to help the people, not just in Rolling Fork, but in Silver City and in some of the other counties and areas that were hit by this. You know, they put a warning out. And so there's been a lot of conversation about how do you know? And I've talked about this because I've been in that situation. You don't know. You try to do the best to take shelter. It makes you think about, is the investment worth it of getting your own shelter, of having a place that you can go? And more people are doing that. You know, I looked at some of the drone footage that showed the devastation. That really shows you how the buildings were decimated. When you see it from above, the cars that are flipped on their side, the piles of debris, the metal wrapped around trees, just so awful for all those displaced people too. What a terrible, terrible thing. All right, let's move on to another one. This one is interesting from Max. He says, Kate, I've been reading a lot lately. I might have seen it in one of the national newspapers. I'm not sure, but I've certainly read stories and I've heard you talk about both of these cases. How about the fact that some parents are being charged after their kids are mass shooters and kill people? Do you think this is going to be a trend that happens with prosecutors in the future? I can see lots of challenges and also problems with this as well, but I don't necessarily think it's the wrong thing. Maybe it's something to warn parents off with kids that are troubled not to allow them to have guns. I'm a gun owner. My two sons have guns. They're hunters, but they are not struggling with any kind of a mental disorder. And they're also older now at this point. You know what? Every situation is going to be different. So I think what you're referring to is there's two different cases that we know of, right? So the one in Michigan, the parents in Michigan that are being charged with involuntary, their 15-year-old murdered four students and injured seven others at that a high school in Michigan, Oxford High School. And the parents are going to stand trial too on that. The Crumleys, their name is. And they're saying, their defense attorneys are saying they had no idea that their son would carry out a mass shooting and made bad decisions. But should they be held criminally liable or not? So they, after that shooting, they got charged. When you think about that, despite the knowledge of circumstances, could they have taken him out of school? And that's what they're saying on the other side of it. They could have. They could have taken him out of school. And why didn't they take him out of school if they knew he was having problems? Then last month, years after initial charges against the Crumleys, an Illinois grand jury indicted the father of a 21-year-old charged with fatally shooting seven people at a 4th of July parade that was horrible in the Chicago suburb of Highland Park. So that indictment charged Robert Cremo Jr. with seven counts of reckless conduct. And prosecutors say, I was probably reading the same thing you were reading. Prosecutors say he took a reckless and unjustified risk when he signed the application for his son's firearm owner's ID card in 2019, knowing his mental state. Now, his defense attorney says the charges are baseless and unprecedented and says that this is wrong. This shouldn't happen. He shouldn't be held responsible for this. Here's the other side of this. These decisions, these things happening, whether that they don't serve time, it gets dismissed, whatever happens, the one thing is maybe it sends off kind of an alarm, a warning, whatever, for anybody, any parent in the U.S. who knows that their child is struggling. I mean, that they're struggling with something, that they shouldn't have a firearm because of things that they've done and said and, you know, whatever. So if you could prevent a mass shooting, do you want your child in that situation to be the shooter? Of course not. And those parents didn't want that. There's no way. We know that. But if there's a way that you can predict and look into the future and not be a party anyway to making that happen. So it's one thing if the, you know, look, you have an adult child, they go and they're not balanced. They have problems. They're carrying around whatever they're carrying around, and they get guns. That's completely different than you're the one who supplied it, signed the thing, whatever. That's a whole different thing. And I think that that's being looked at a lot more. Guardians, what are they doing, and how does the young shooter have access to firearms? We're in really gray territory, though, here, really gray territory. And there have been more than just those that I just mentioned. There are others that are facing charges, too. We'll see where all of that ends up. Like I said, and it's totally new territory as to what you can prove, what is correct, what's not correct. And there's a lot of sad answers when mass shootings happen. That's what's the worst. Of course, any way to prevent it, I think, is what you want. I can't imagine having a child. I was scared to death for my nephews when they were in school. Because you would hear there was a lockdown, and they're used to it. They grew up with it. But I can't imagine having a child being on the other side of that either. Just awful. All right, this one's from Bo. He says, this is Bo from Bernardino County. I've been watching what's happening in Los Angeles, Katie, and this strike was so huge. There were so many workers that were part of this 3-day strike that they held, and I say good for them. I had a mother that worked in a cafeteria, and boy, she was so underpaid. I'm not necessarily pro-union, but I'm pro-paying people what they're worth, so we'll put that aside for now. But I think that, you know, the bus drivers, the cafeteria workers, the custodians, they should be paid a livelihood that they can sustain instead of having to juggle 12 different jobs. And they needed it. And I think they cut a deal. So I think that's a good thing for sure. Anything that benefits kids, if you're sending your kids to those schools, you want people to be happy, and you want them to correct really egregious pay inequities, I think. Well, yeah, that was a huge strike. There was 420,000, something like that, students in this, because that's our second largest school district, that were out of the classroom because of it. And yeah, they're getting health care benefits now for part-time employees. They're getting an increase in salary. They worked it out. They figured out a way to make it happen. And that's good, because you think of Los Angeles and how much it costs to live there anyway. I mean, that's probably a big part of the problem to begin with. So it worked. This worked for sure to help all those people. All right, that's it for the mailbag. Remember, you can email me, Kate at katedelaneyradio.com.
Radio. Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Cue the maraschino cherry. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well,
you see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
US USA News Update. An Israeli delegation has canceled its visit to Washington following the U.S. decision not to veto a U.N. Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller.
We believe that, number one, a full-scale invasion of Rafah would be a mistake. It would be a mistake not just because of the civilian harm that it would cause, which would be immense.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced the decision Monday, saying that the resolution failed to include a condition for the release of Israeli hostages. Donald Trump says he can now secure a lower bond as he appeals his New York civil fraud trial, with an appeals court reducing it from $454 million to $175 million and giving him 10 days to pay. Boeing CEO David Calhoun Monday announced he would leave the company. It's the latest fallout for the plane maker amid multiple federal probes into its practices following a 737 MAX door blowout in January. John Schaefer, USA News.
I need to file my tax return right the first time. How can I be sure to do that?
Doing your taxes yourself? Using e-file is the best way to file an accurate tax return. Mistakes can delay your refund, so spend an extra few minutes making sure you can file an accurate return the first time around. Avoid common errors by spelling all names correctly and using correct Social Security numbers. Double-check your bank account numbers for direct deposit and double-check your math, too. Oh yeah, don't forget to sign and date your return.
Both my legs were amputated due to an IED. It's when you start to try to get back into, like, an everyday life. I absolutely felt like I lost some of my purpose. There must be something more. When DAV came into my life, they gave me a new mission. I could still be a productive member of society, could still support a family.
The DAV gave him that sense of structure and purpose again to get his life back together.
Visit DAV.org to learn more about our mission.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for Life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for Life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422. Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for Life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for Life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
To introduce you to Pat Marquis. Such an interesting story. Imagine if your wife comes to you and says, I want to ride the Pacific Crest Trail. That happened to him. Of course, they both were excellent when it came to riding horses and doing adventurous things in the outdoors. So we'll get to that story in just a minute. But before we do, I would be remiss not to tell you a little bit about his story. What a career he certainly has had. And I can understand why he and his wife lived an adventurous life out of doors, for sure, because of some of the things that happened being on a small ranch. And also in his career, think of Alaska and think of being in Alaska and being the first construction worker at the Valdez terminal site of the Alaska pipeline. Wow. I can think of bears. I can think of incredible wildlife, but also I can think of being scared out of my mind. I'm sure Pat wasn't. So Pat, thanks for coming on.
Oh, well, thank you. Appreciate it.
So we do have to tell the stories. What was that like being the first construction worker at this huge site on the Alaska pipeline?
It was an adventure in itself. The site itself obviously had people working on it to prepare it, at least doing topographic surveys and all the information they needed to design the facility. But when we got there, we went to a camp that was in the town of Valdez, so trailer camp. And the first day of work, they took us by bus into town and took us to the boat harbor. We got off, you know, onto a unified six-pack. That means we can carry six people. And they took us across the bay, which is several miles. So that took, 10, 15 minutes. They offloaded us onto a floating raft, basically. We put all our equipment on the raft and then put all our equipment into a rowboat. And we rowed ashore to do our first day's worth of work. Now, wow. This is a $1 billion contract. They had all the money in the world, and yet we're rowing ashore. It was amazing, to tell you the truth.
Oh, boy. Well, we could talk about it all day, but let's get to your other journey. And the book is called that, The Journey. And you talk about the Pacific Crest Trail. And how did this come about? How did Rhonda come up with this idea that she wanted to do it?
Well, we've been adventurous. And several years before this, he had embarked on a trail here in Central Oregon that's called the Matolius-Wendigo Trail, which is a 150-mile trail, taking you from one mountain pass and down into the valleys and along the route parallel to the highway system and then back up to the top of the mountains. And she rode that with several friends, not me because I was working, but she did that trip, and that kind of got her started on knowing that she was capable of doing something like this. In packing, to carry your own supplies and what do you carry, planning and training herself and the horse to be able to do it. So that got it started. And then we had friends that had ridden a portion of the Pacific Crest Trail through the state of Oregon, roughly 450 miles. And they had, and they were close friends. And so Rhonda had the opportunity to bounce ideas off these folks and understand just really what it took in terms of planning and preparation to embark on a trip of this nature. You have anywhere from 4 to 7 days at times that you're totally off any system at all other than the trail, and it's totally up to you, to prepare yourself and to have all the food and fodder and horse supplies and everything you need to stay safe and have a good time.
And this is rugged and treacherous. Were you worried? I mean, you did part of it. Were you worried about her being out there by herself?
That's part of life. We separate all the time. You could get hurt driving to work the next day. So, yes, I worried about her and had those concerns, but I also had a lot of faith in her inner abilities to cope with most anything. And that was pretty much proven on her trip on the trail. She had several circumstances that took every bit of knowledge and wit and perseverance and courage to get her through it.
Yeah. And she rode for 1,500 miles, which is amazing. You told me 15 miles a day for basically 100 days. And you were there for part of it. When you could be there, you were there. What was it like being on the horse, being with her when you could do it? And what kind of things, what kind of nature did you see? It had to be beautiful.
Oh, yes, it certainly was, although I didn't go on the most difficult portions. I have the malady of being afraid of heights to some extent. So, when we were out there riding together, she said, just look at the butt of the horse in front of you and don't look down. it sometimes is that kind of a treacherous trail where you might, if you went off the trail, you might have 500 feet to go downhill in a rolling fashion, not walking. So I enjoyed it thoroughly and riding with her. I wish I could have gone on more of the trip, but, we took advantage of this opportunity to be together, and, we knew we were getting close to the end, and it was just a really fun time to be together, even though, the first 2 days were in rain. And, finding a campsite and putting your horses up and making sure they're secure and all those things, getting your tent and facilities put up and weathering the storm is part of that trip.
And it's interesting in deciding to do that trip. I mean, you both knew how to handle horses. You loved to, and you were adventurous, as I said, and you liked horseback riding as a couple, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Our life has been centered on our relationships with the horses. And, you know, gladly so. And even though they're sometimes problematic, it's been a wonderful life to be able to have that relationship. Horses are a unique animal. And as you would probably find if you got online and studied it a little bit, there's a lot of horses now being used to help people that have mental difficulties, that they can relate to a horse easier than they can people.
Yeah. What was her most difficult day on that journey?
Well, there were several, but one was the day that she was riding on the trail above Lake Tahoe through the top of the ridges, and the horse... Basically, she had an accident with the horse. The horse got caught on some brush and backed up and consequently went off the trail and rolled down the hill. And she had to rescue the horse and get him back on his feet, get all the supplies back on him, and he was injured severely. And from then, she had to figure out, you know, communication with me to say, I've got to come off the trail. And luckily, he had a hiker there that had witnessed all of this, and he helped her accomplish what needed to be done in order for her to get back down to civilization, and we could tend to the horse's problems that he had through his injuries. So that was probably one of the most difficult times for her. Not only did she have to do all of that, the horse also trampled her on the way back up on to the trail. And she separated her collarbone from her sternum.
Ugh.
And so she came out riding the horse for 10 miles while injured herself. And we had to take her to the hospital that night.
Wow. In writing that story and then writing all the wonderful things that happened and just what a determination and bravery and courage and everything that's mixed in with that, how fun was this for you to put pen to paper, so to speak, and come up with the journey?
You know, when she first asked me, I wasn't all that hot to do it. I knew how troublesome it was going to be in terms of the logistics of just providing the food and transportation to move our crew, basically, from one spot to the other. But after a while, I got to thinking about it, and I said, well, you know, it's going to be an adventure. Why not do it? And obviously it was an adventure. I loved meeting so many people along the trail when I was by myself and Rhonda was up on the mountains. And I'd stop over and chat with the nearest person who might be camping or just walking or whatever they might be doing, you know, and sometimes it was store owners, sometimes it was forestry people. But there was always an occasion for me to, you know, be social and just enjoyed it thoroughly.
What do you hope people, Pat, take away from reading your book, The Journey, which you can get on Amazon or Barnes & Noble?
Well, you know, I had some people write me after they'd read the book, and I'm going to just quote this because they have a lot of meaning to me. These were testimonials from people that had been through the book. One was, loved the book, loved your style of writing. Can't say enough good things about it. Another one, a delightful story of grit, determination, and labor of love. And let's see, the last one was from somebody I'd never known, and he had read the book and sent me a letter. It said, through humor, pathos, and clarity, the author takes readers on an unforgettable journey where they can experience the heartbreak, trials, and triumphs of this extreme adventure riding the PCT. It's a fascinating read, one that I found hard to put down until the journey's end.
Perfect place to end this. Pat, thank you so much for coming on.
All right. Thank you, Kate. I appreciate it very much.
Ever
ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pauti Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hardworking people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium. Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutraMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutritious meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutraMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com. NutraMedical.com for the whole family.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
So, you know, when you say you're going to do something like, I don't know, climb Mount Kilimanjaro, and people look at you like, yeah, right, you're going to do that. I'm going to introduce you to someone that is so cool, who actually follows through and does those things. If she says it, I think she absolutely is going to do it. So Anne Bonny is a change expert and a keynote speaker. And more importantly, I think she does move mountains. And one of the things that she says is change is the only constant. And what is it about us where we don't get off our butts and we don't like to feel uncomfortable, where we know we could train? Maybe we can't climb Kilimanjaro like she did, but we could do other steps and do other things. And she tells you how to do that, and she's done it herself. And so we're going to talk about her trip to Kilimanjaro, because I think it's awesome that she did that. And she's certainly done many other things as well. Just a quick little note on her background. How many times have you moved? She's moved at least 27 times. When she was a kid, 13 different schools, right? There's no being shy if you go to 13 different schools. So Anne, thanks so much for hanging with us.
Oh, I'm a little uncomfortable and shy about this, Kate, but it's great to be here.
Yeah, I bet you're shy. So first of all, tell us about Kilimanjaro. How'd that come about?
I'm turning 50 next summer, and a friend of mine and I were talking about doing safari, and I was like, how about we go to Kenya and do a safari? And then another friend said, while you're down there, why don't you climb Kilimanjaro? And I passed it by my friend, and she said, yeah, that's always been a bucket list item of mine. And So I was always looking for things that make you uncomfortable. And so I said, yeah, let's do it.
Wow. So you made the commitment, you're going to do it. And then how do you get ready for that?
You walk a lot. I mean, the cool thing about Kilimanjaro, unlike Everest requires technical climbing skills and there's a lot of danger and crevasses and all that stuff. Kilimanjaro is just a really hard hike. So any pedestrian who doesn't have the climbing skills can still very, very realistically do Kilimanjaro. So that was one of the motivating factors. We read a lot. We talked to a lot of people who'd been up there. So we kind of got some of the tips that they wish they'd known. And then we walked a lot.
What was the most challenging aspect of this?
For me, you know, it was interesting because there were three of us that went on this trip and we each had a sort of a different challenge. Mine was going down, interestingly. Not that walking downhill was so hard, but for some reason I had set the peak in my head. And I don't know whether I thought there was some magical fairy that was going to fly me down to the bottom or what, but we got to the top and our guides were like, okay, it's time to go down. And I thought, oh crap. Now I have another 10-mile hike to get to where we sleep tonight. And that ended up being the most mentally challenging for me because I essentially set my goal for the top and that life kind of ended there, but it didn't.
What was it like when you got to the top? What was that feeling like?
First of all, it was surreal because you're a little bit oxygen deprived. You're exhausted because you started that day at 11 o'clock the night before. But you look at that sign that you've been waiting for 8 months to look at and you're like, holy crap, I'm here. Like, I did it. It's, you know, and we were all, of course, crying and our guides were worried about us. Like, why are you crying? We're like, we're so happy that we're here. And then you try to remember all the pictures you were planning to take with all, you know, with your alma mater sign and your this is 50 sign and all this. And you're trying to remember all the things you were going to do when you got there. And then the guides are trying to get you down quickly because again, you're at 19,341 feet and there's not a whole lot of air up there. So it was surreal. It was fast. It was amazing. And I got the main picture that I wanted.
and to do this whole thing, like you talk about, it's like a hard hike. How long did it take?
So we did the, what's called the Coca-Cola route or the, now I can't think of the name. But anyway, we did the 5-day route. So it was 3.5 days to the top. So we hiked every day for 3 days and then did the summit day and then a day and a half to get down. But on summit day, we started at 11 o'clock at night and didn't reach the actual summit probably 4 miles away until 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. If it tells you how slow we were actually going and how steep it was. Yeah.
Wow. And what's it like as you're moving along on that journey? I mean, what are you seeing as you get higher and higher?
It's 11 o'clock at night. You're not seeing a darn thing. From the gate where we started, it was cool because you go through lots of different ecological zones. You know, you start in the rainforest where you're seeing monkeys and lots of trees and thick jungly. And then you move into the moorland where it's more scrubby. Then you move into, I think the Arctic desert is above that. So there's like very little plants. And then you get to the point where you're above the clouds, above 15,000 feet, and there's just rocks, nothing. It's like the moon. And so it was neat to go through all those phases and kind of be able to mark your progress along the way. But on summit day between 11 p.m. and sunrise, really all you could see was the lines of headlights of the other hikers in front of you. And I finally got to the point where I was like, "And don't look at them because they were really far away and really steep." And to think about getting to where they were was kind of overwhelming. So I saw a lot of my feet and the dirt under my feet.
Wow, the headlights. I mean, it's kind of, there's an analogy, I think, buried in that somewhere, because you talk about that, about discomfort. So to to, and you said to me off the air that you hunt discomfort. So that you have a thing that I think you must do, a mechanism where, hey, that's what you do. You knew that I don't want to look there because, oh my gosh, that's going to freak me out. Right. And so I think for people listening, there's a good lesson in that.
Well, and that's 100% the case. You know, one of the other people that I was hiking with, at about 2 a.m, she had her hard time, and because she was looking at those headlights and she was saying, I can't go there like that. I can't do that. My body can't do that. And, I asked her, I said, can you take 10 more steps? Look down. Can you take 10 more steps? And she ended up just taking 10 steps and then taking 10 more steps and taking 10 more steps. And that's such a good thing to think about when you're in the middle of something really uncomfortable, when you're in the middle of a huge goal that feels insurmountable. Don't look at the finish line. Don't look at where you're going because it'll get in your head. Just look down and take the next 10 steps or take the next one step. I used that when I was in the middle of the pandemic. I was like, I'm thinking too big, shrink the bubble, just get through the next day. And that's a great way to move through discomfort a little bit easier.
Ooh, I like that. Shrink the bubble. We're speaking with Anne Bonney. She's a change expert and a keynote speaker. And she climbed Kilimanjaro. Oh my gosh. So you get to the bottom, you're done, you're through, so to speak. What's that celebration like?
Beer. because we didn't shower for 5 days. We were eating dehydrated hiking meals all the way up and snack bars and everything. So we had a feast of delicious fresh food and the beers, and we laughed and we looked at our pictures and we talked about the lessons. And it was then that it really hit, like, whoa, we just did that. Like, we have now been to the top of Kilimanjaro. It was hard, and we did it. And that will never go away. And that is worth all the hours of training and all the worry and the money and the, you know, discomfort all at the time, to be able to say, holy crap, I did that.
So what will you and these friends do for an encore?
That's like asking somebody who just had a baby when they're going to have the next baby. What's my next? I bought a unicycle the other day. I think that's my encore, is at 49 years old, learning how to ride a unicycle. I think that's my next. But, you know, my next discomfort hunting encore, I think, is a 10-day silent meditation retreat.
Ooh.
Right? Shifting the gears and looking at, okay, what have I not done? I've done a lot of physical challenges. Now I'm like, can I shut up and sit down for 10 days? I don't know.
That is tough, especially for a speaker.
I intentionally created a job where I get paid to speak. And now I'm going to go not talk for 10 days. You can see how uncomfortable that'll be.
I love that challenge. Hunting discomfort. It's awesome. You're awesome. So if people want to know more about you, Anne Bonney, where can they go?
Yourchangespeaker.com or AnneBonney.com if you want to just make it easy.
There you go. Anne, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, Kate. Great to chat.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney. I am truly amazed by this audience. Many of you have been reaching out to me to ask more on what I call the No Drone Zone. How do you find out about the show or listen to podcasts or guests or even my books? So here we go. Go to katedelaneyradio.com for more on what's shaking in my orbit. To reach me, simply hit the contact tab and send an email. Behind the scenes photos, great video, travels, the dog. Yeah, that's Guinness. He is the mascot. Go to Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook, Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook, or hit me up on Twitter at Kate S. Delaney, at Kate. Kate S. Delaney. For any of my books, including Deal Your Own Destiny, Amazon simply is the easiest. Thanks for listening as we talk about what's happening in my backyard and yours and how it affects us. We throw in laughs, cheap movie reviews, the man cave, and authors with some interesting stories to tell. If you've already forgotten everything I've just said, just go to katedelaneyradio.com.